Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. InvestSTL's Dara Eskridge and For the Ville's Aaron Williams took on a monumental task after the May 16th EF3 tornado ripped through the Ville, one of the city's historic North St. Louis neighborhoods. They had to mobilize people and deliver resources to parts of the city that have struggled for years with economic disinvestment. But Eskridge and Williams say that the community stepped up in a big way. They both played a role in shepherding the For the Ville emergency hub through the initial response to the storm. That work included gathering more than 600 volunteers and delivering construction supplies and daily essentials to 4,500 families. They also helped stabilize more than 360 homes with things like tarps and boarding. With city, state, and federal governmental leaders taking a more direct role in the tornado response, Eskridge and Williams are trying to look ahead now that the For the Ville emergency hub has ended its operations. They both spoke with St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum last week about a direct payment program for tornado victims and how they plan to advise the city on how to rebuild.
So, Aaron, can you talk about the For the Ville emergency hub and what prompted you and many others to set it up after the tornado?
So prior to the tornado, For the Ville was conducting a corridor planning process for Dr. Martin Luther King, trying to work with the community to envision what the future of MLK could be as the spine of a reinvigorated community around the commercial corridor. Part of that planning process included us opening an info center for residents and other community members to drop in and get updates on the planning process. So that info center is what became the emergency response hub after the tornado. The day of the tornado, I was actually presenting awards to Sumner graduates at their graduation. So I had just left the neighborhood heading over to Harris Stowe for the graduation. And just after leaving, I was informed that a tornado ripped through the neighborhood. So that evening, I took a ride to assess the damage. And after doing that, I made a decision that I needed to go out there as the representative of a community organization and work with our neighbors, our community members to try to triage the damage. After that first day, we started getting inquiries from other people about how they can support what we were doing. So we simply told them to meet us at the info center. And after so many people began meeting us at the info center, that turned into other people dropping off resources, and it evolved into the emergency response hub that we managed for 3 weeks.
Dara, I'm interested to hear how you were part of this chainsaw crew, but I also want to know how InvestSTL helped with this effort, because if InvestSTL is involved with like fundraising and getting money for certain things, to say this would be a Herculean endeavor would be the understatement of the year in terms of getting the resources needed for the affected area. So I'd like you to elaborate on your involvement with this.
So as Aaron alluded, like being part of the chainsaw crew was much more about, you know, just individual relationships and people coming together. And so, yeah, we were out there raking and cutting and clearing. But then certainly the next day became much more about a formal operation, where it now became about the organization that I represent. And so when it became clear that our partners who are based in that community wanted to stand up a full recovery operation, we leveraged the assets of our organization, including our own staff, to be able to do that.
And Dara, for people who may not have gone to parts of North St. Louis where the tornado hit, can you just describe what you and other people in this emergency hub saw with your own eyes, and just also describe the enormity of what you had to do over the past couple of weeks?
frankly, the first kind of feeling that came to me was absolute heartache, right? The North Side is a chosen place for me. It's a place that I have very fond memories of growing up. And I think a lot of people who we saw at the Hub share that sentiment, right? This is a place that they love, that is endearing for them. And we're immediately met with this question of what's going to become of this place that we've loved so much after the just incredible devastation that has come. But then quickly answers started to come up where people started forming, right? They started organizing. Aaron put out a call and asked people to join a chainsaw crew and then said, meet me at an info center. And the volume of people that grew day by day was incredible. It was really an image of a community coming to serve and tend to itself. So I think that's kind of like the immediate of what we saw. And then as time went on over the weeks, you certainly see these notes of resiliency, right? People being very committed to this place and wanting to stay in these communities and being optimistic that answers and the resources that they needed to rebuild would come, but also being very vigilant in that they weren't leaving this place because they know what could happen if they're not, you know, keeping watch over their communities.
Aaron, as far as like just people that were volunteering for this, did you have to do very much to get people to help over the past couple of weeks? Or was it just sort of a spontaneous burst of volunteerism that maybe even took you by surprise?
So I wouldn't call it a spontaneous burst of volunteerism, nor would I call it a challenge to bring in volunteers. I think that this entire mobilization was rooted in relationships. So our relationships span quite broadly across different industries and different efforts within the community. So once our partners, community partners and friends, realized that we were on the ground and we had like a central location to organize, they just started galvanizing around us.
I'll throw this open to either one of you. Can you just sort of talk about the actual impact? Like, how many people did you give food and supplies to? How many tarps did you put on people's homes? What was the quantifiable impact of your work?
I'll speak to the construction or stabilization work, and I'll let Dara speak to the drive up, walk up support. So with the construction crew, we boarded and tarped over 360 homes. Collectively between For the Ville and Dream Builders, or we were sort of, maestroing the effort, but it was a number of contracting companies and walk-up skilled labor that supported us in that for a total of 360 plus homes that were temporarily stabilized.
And then in terms of, you know, households that we interacted with and provided household care supplies and personal care supplies, meals, and also just connections to other resources. We were looking, by the time we closed, approaching 4,500 households. And that only includes people that like we have paperwork for. We also interacted with a lot of families just out in the neighborhoods as our teams were canvassing and, you know, handing out supplies as we came across distinct needs. Like, you know, the Ville went without power for a very long time. So we had a crew out there handing out flashlights and taking charging stations and taking water. So I'd say 4,500 is like probably the baseline, but far more than that.
Absolutely. And I think we had just over 600 volunteers to come through and support us in our efforts through the 3 weeks.
So when both me and my colleagues have talked with residents who have had their homes damaged or destroyed by the tornado, they are so grateful to groups like yours and Action St. Louis and the countless other groups that stepped up to help. They also have said, we wish that the governments had done this and hadn't like given or put the onus on volunteers for the initial phase. We're going to talk about how that's changing, but given that you are the volunteers people are talking about who they wished were not like primarily responsible for some of the first level response, I'd be interested in both of your takes on that, because on the one hand, I could understand that sentiment, but on the other hand, there's a lingering distrust of government that goes back decades, if not centuries. So maybe this was the better option. So I'll throw it open to either one of you.
So one, I would say, no matter the level of government organization, our relationships and our commitment to this community means that we were going to be out there no matter what. Now, because there wasn't really an organized playbook for this instance, we showed up in ways that were maybe not very typical for us and it caused us to stretch and allowed us to kind of stand in the gap while government got, you know, their footing. But still, no matter what, we were going to be out there. I think it is maybe more useful to just look at what have we learned over these 3 weeks between, you know, self-organized, self-deployed, and government infrastructure to see what can we apply forward, right? Because I think the solution for the long term rests in the middle. We need highly organized government to shepherd resources, to leverage, you know, the workforce of city government, especially when it comes to like forestry and building division and those entities, right? They have to be the ones who are coordinating state and federal resources and participation, right? Nobody else can step in that gap. So really making sure that from the government side, that we're really clear on what that playbook looks like for the future, right? So we know who needs to make the call, what needs to be requested, who needs to be coordinating between these different government levels.
I want to talk about where you all are going forward, because we're clearly in a different phase of the recovery effort, especially with FEMA coming on board, with the state giving money, with some of the RAMS money possibly going to the recovery effort. What I read yesterday is your group is going to be embarking on a number of initiatives, one of which is direct cash assistance to people that need it. If either one of you wants to talk about how that's going to work and how much money you're going to need for this to be effective, the floor is yours.
So it will be some time before resources start flowing to people who need it most. And so the direct cash assistance is meant to be something that can be more immediate and far more flexible than most government programs can be to get people the kind of cash that they need to make the decisions that they need to make for themselves to be well in this moment. It's not, you know, it's not long-term rebuilding funding right now. It's like, what are the immediate emergent needs that are coming up for a household that they need to tend to? And so we are looking at $3,000 per affected unit that they can use as they need to use, right? So they can use it to find temporary housing. They can use it to get that tarp put on, but they haven't been able to get it done yet. They can use it, you know, to get childcare so that they can tend to cleaning up the house in the moment. Whatever helps them start to rebuild their lives, that is what those dollars can be used for. And so we're projecting that, you know, we need at least $4 million to really be able to serve the full need as we understand it today. And we're working very quickly to stand that program up so that we can start being proactive in reaching out to those households who have received that red sticker designation from the city.
That was InvestSTL's Dara Eskridge and For the Ville's Aaron Williams discussing how they plan to continue helping victims of the May 16th tornado. You can listen to more of Eskridge and Williams' conversation with STL PR's Jason Rosenbaum on stlpr.org.
This episode was produced and engineered by
Jason Rosenbaum
and edited by Danny Wisentowski.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Thank you.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.